Hello, it's the world's longest running football fans podcast, and it's by far the wealthiest football fans podcast that's done by Celtic fans, because it's a Celtic Underground podcast and we are sponsored by Superdry. Now, we're obviously not sponsored by Superdry, but if anybody from Superdry is listening, don't mind sending the stuff in. However, if you listen to the By the Men Celtic podcast, you'll know where that comes from. The old man with the glasses up at the back of the North Stand who was talking about me, he was exaggerating a wee bit because there was no baseball cap. It was a really sunny day and I happened to have a Superdry top on. And he's just jealous because, you know, when he goes in the shop, they actually turn the music up to frighten him off. Anyway, enough of that crap. This week I am joined by the owner of Glasgow Rocks basketball team, Mr. Duncan Smiley. We talk about the Livingston game, we talk about the Ross County victory, and then we preview the Lazio game before touching on how his team is doing so far. It's just starting off this season and where it's going to go. Anyway, enough from me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Duncan Smith. So I am joined now by leading sports entrepreneur Duncan Smiley. How are you doing, Duncan?
I'm doing very well. I've never been called that before.
I just thought I'd give you a grand introduction.
Surely a magnet or a mogul.
I don't think anyone in Scotland's a sports magnate or mogul, are they?
No, not really. But it's not really a Scottish thing, is it?
No, it's not.
The wee guy owns a basketball team.
Yeah, so yeah, for those people who don't know, Glasgow Rocks is the team that you run, and we'll talk about that later because there's some games coming up, and you've had some games. For people who may be interested in trying it out, you've been on the podcast before a couple of times, but people who haven't heard it before, we can talk about that. But before we do that, this is the first podcast since the Livingston game. I don't want to dwell on it too much because it was a defeat, but you and I were both there separately. What was your take on that game?
It was dreadful. I don't go to many away games, and maybe there's a reason why, because the last one I was at was at Easter Road when Lenny was still the manager there, and we lost that day as well. But no, it was a terrible game, and I hate those plastic pitches. I mean, I really do. I don't think I've ever seen a good game of football played.
So do our players, I think.
I think that we seem to suffer more than most. I don't know if it's because we play a certain sort of football or we're used to playing on that beautiful pitch at Celtic Park, but it seems to affect us more than it does, for example, Rangers. But again, the second the game started, it can't have come as a surprise to the team or to the manager that Livingston are going to come at you really hard, be very physical, because that's exactly what they did. And I had a horrible feeling right from the start of the game. Really did not have a nice feeling about it at all. And when Ryan Christie was sent off, I don't know, it obviously has an impact on the game, but I'm not sure that we'd have done any better had he played the whole game. I'd like to think we would, but no, it's just one of those that you just don't see coming. But when you're watching it unfold in front of your eyes, it's terrifying.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Under Brendan Rodgers 2 years ago when we lost it at Rugby Park and Malumbu scored.
Aye.
On the plastic pitch where, as you're watching it, you're just thinking, these players don't fancy this. And then there's a bit to do with refereeing as well, which I'll touch on. But I'm not using that as an excuse. I just think this is a compound. I think the refereeing's a compounding feature, because you talk about the Ryan Christie, Phil. I was actually just in. There'd been a passage of play in the build up to Ryan Christie where we were trying to pass the ball, play the ball out from the back. And the ball was passed to three Celtic players in a row. And three of them in a row sort of passed the ball straight back to whoever gave it to them as quickly as they gave a quick look over their shoulder and then gave the ball straight back to the person who gave it to them. And I was just in the middle of saying to my mate, our players are shying out of tackles here because Livingston are being allowed to thump into the back of us. So I was just about to be very critical of Livingston, and then Ryan Christie goes and commits a red card offence.
I know, and it is, I mean, it's a red card all day long, and it's It's clumsy. Although I said to somebody, it's no Ryan Christie's style. And he says, that's his fourth red card that he's had. He's only 24. And you would never think that Ryan Christie would have had four red cards, but he has.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because a text I got from my brother, that when you know that way somebody sends you, points something out to you, and then after they pointed it out, you then think, aye, you've got a point.
Aye.
And my brother sent me a text saying, I wish Ryan Christie would, when he loses the ball, would stop then chasing after it like a headless chicken for 30 seconds, because he keeps giving away those types of fouls.
Aye.
And then you think back to, yeah, I can think of, there was a game, I think it was in Europe this season, where he nearly did the same challenge, but the opponent just managed to jump out of the way. And I remember the whole ground taking a big sharp intake of breath as he did it.
And
it is something he does, actually. If he loses it in a silly position, he goes chasing after it.
And then that's his style, because he is, I've heard it said in this podcast before, he's like a PlayStation player that somebody's pressing these buttons too fast.
Yeah.
Because he just seems to go into boost mode. And it's a natural thing for him. But it is a red card. It's a red card all day long. But it was a poor game. And losing that goal just after half time really took the wind out of sails. I think we could have still been playing there yet and not have scored.
The thing about the refereeing bit is, Livingston played, I remember seeing a thing, it was about 10 years ago when Tony Pulis was still Stoke manager, and he was talking about how Stoke played, and it was something like, it's not exact, but roughly this, the average length of time that the ball was in play in an English Premiership game is 68 minutes, but in a Stoke at home game, it was 58 minutes, because what Stoke would do is, whenever they were playing teams who are, especially if they were playing teams above them in the league, the minute the opposition strung more than about two, three passes together, they would commit a niggly wee foul, so that then allowed them to set back up in formation. And when they committed the foul, they would pick the ball up and they would walk slowly away with the ball. And then just as the referee was about to pull them up, they would then drop the ball. And all of that would just waste 20, 30 seconds at every foul.
Aye.
And they're committing all these regular fouls, and it just slows the play down. And as I say, I'm not saying, it's a legitimate tactic for a team like Livingston, who are not as good as us. But then it's all this stuff that breaks up our
momentum. And they get a throw in, and then one player goes to it, then decides he's not taking it, puts the ball down. It's a real bugbear in mine, because watching all American sport as I do, the clock tends to stop. And I'd just rather they said a football game is 60 minutes, and when the ball's out of play, the clock stops. And then you eradicate time wasting overnight. And I think I'd heard that the average game is about 60, 62 minutes. Just have a straight 60 minutes, or two halves of 30 minutes, and when the ball's out for a shy, the clock stops. It's a really, really easy thing to do, because it is frustrating. But it's exactly, if we're playing a team, if we're playing a PSG or a Barcelona, it's a tactic that we would probably employ.
Well, actually, my irritation is it's a tactic we don't employ, but should.
Well, it certainly didn't under Brendan Rodgers. I don't know how it would fare under Lenny against an absolute top quality team like that. I think he'd be a wee bit more, he'd be happy to sacrifice maybe his principles a wee bit better than maybe Brendan would. But the Livingston game was poor, and it was frustrating as well on the back of the draw that we'd had at Hibs.
Do you know what I felt as well with the Livingston game? Some of the players who really seemed to, Julian, Bauer, Bolingoli, Edward, the players who maybe aren't used to playing against a really physical team where the referee lets them get away with stuff on a plastic pitch, were the ones that for me looked most, almost shocked by what was going on around them.
Aye, I mean, I thought in particular Julian was really poor, and he looked like he was wanting a fight. He was angry about everything. That striker of theirs, the Aussie guy, was dragging him all over the pitch.
Yeah,
and he looked well out of sorts. And I was at the game. I was in the boardroom at Livingston, and then after it, Gary Holt, the Livingston manager, came in and spoke to us. Of course, he's as high as a kite.
Yeah.
First time Livingston had ever beat Celtic. That's the only team in Scotland they'd never beat. And he came in and he was quite high, and he said that Lenny had come in to see him, and I'll not repeat exactly word for word because this will have to go out with loads of bleeps on it. But he was basically saying that Lenny had bawled his team out, saying, "You're a bunch of football snobs. You have been out fought and outdone. You've looked soft. You've looked like pussies." That was Gary Holt said that Lenny told him that was his sort of debrief to the team.
I can get that because the only counter to that would be, I was driving home listening to Radio Scotland with all the euphemisms about Livingston were in Celtic's faces and, you know, they were up for it and they were... And Julian will never have experienced that in his career. And then as a part of me thinks, well why? Because he's 26 years of age, he's been a professional footballer for quite some time. The only reason he'll never experience that is because you wouldn't be allowed to play like that in French football. It reminded me of somebody telling me last year when the Salzburg scouts had come to watch Celtic last season in an SPL game before that we played them in the Europa League. They then had a drink afterwards and they'd actually said, they were talking in general about why people don't look for players in Scottish football when there might be players and things like that. And they said that the only team that they could watch to see if there was players worth buying was Celtic. Because Celtic are the only team that play for any consistent amount of time outside of the domestic league, because Scottish football is not played like any other league in the rest of Europe. It's played like football was in the 1980s because of the way that referees referee games in Scotland. And as a consequence, teams can't judge players how they play in Scottish football because they don't play a style of football that's comparable to anything else in the rest of Europe.
No, it's probably right. And I think it works conversely, where players come from other countries, and even from down south. And I think that it's very easy to underestimate Scottish football. And I think a lot of people get shocked by it. Not necessarily by the quality of it, but just at the speed and the physicality of it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a football purist. I love watching Scottish football. I quite like Blood and Thunder. I'm not that bothered watching Man City with their tippy-tappy or whatever you call it. I'd far rather watch St Mirren and Hamilton knock lumps at each other, but that's probably more about me.
Oh, I mean, I can't be that. I mean, I don't really watch the Premiership, but at the same time, when we have the wailing and gnashing of teeth about why our national team's not great and why we're not bringing youngsters through, well, maybe it's because the way we play football in this country is different to the way the rest of Europe plays, and physicality is rewarded ahead of technicalities.
No, it is. I've still heard it said in football that he's too wee. And you think, surely we're not still saying that about a player. He's maybe different, he's a goalie. But to say, oh, he's too wee and that's why he's not getting a game in this day and age, it probably says a lot about Scottish football.
Well,
but
it is. And then that's a compounding problem because the average height in Scotland is only 5'8", so we're quite a small nation.
Exactly. But it's wrong that you can play top level football on a plastic pitch. And we've got three of them out of our league. And I think surely that is giving a team a competitive advantage by allowing them to play in a pitch like that. Forget how it looks dreadful. When you see a game from Hamilton or Kilmarnock even or Livingston, it just looks dreadful. It's embarrassing. But it shouldn't be allowed. And it shouldn't be allowed in UEFA competitions either.
Well, you know, to get on to... I'm going to touch on the basketball for a minute, actually. So I was at your first game of the season.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I noticed, you know, sold quite a lot of tickets for the game. But I went out, my boy wanted to go to the toilet and I went out with him to go outside. I looked at the screens and I looked at how the position of the camera angle, and you'd made sure that the majority of tickets that the section that was facing the cameras had all the tickets going in it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is basic marketing, right?
Of course it is, yeah.
And then you look at Scottish football, and they don't realise they're in the sales industry. Because they live in a world of, if you're Hamilton, we get X number of people through the door. I know someone who knows directors at Stenhouse Muir, and I remember him telling me once that at a board meeting at Stenhouse Muir, they said, we could open the doors for free and give everybody, we could open the doors, let everybody in and give them a free apple as they pass through, we still get 500 people. And I think that then, that attitude is pervasive in Scottish football in terms of not marketing the game. So they don't care that the pitch looks like a bad shiny suit. And they don't care that there's these massive banks of empty seats and supporters can sit wherever they want and not fill the seats in front of the cameras. And that, you know, they don't care about any of that because they don't see themselves in the sales industry.
No, they don't. And most of them have got their hands out waiting on a cheque for the SPFL or the SFA. And I, as you know, I was on the board at Partick Thistle for about 15 minutes.
As long as that.
But they, because they've got, Fir Hill, they've got a relatively new stand, but they point their cameras at the old stand. So it's like a gazillion years old. And they don't actually sell tickets for that old stand. So they've got a camera. They might have their new shiny stand that's got quite a few fans in it, but they're shooting over that into an old wooden 1970s type stand that's got about 40 folk in it. And you think, well, why would you not just put the cameras over there and point it at the nice new shiny stand? And you see that a lot in football, is that there's clearly fans underneath where the cameras are, but they're pointing out onto empty seats. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And we actually get fined for it in our league. There's a fine in our league. If your game's on TV and the camera's pointing, I don't know if it's ever been enforced, but maybe it's just there to make you think. But if there's an unacceptable amount of empty seats, you're supposed to delay the tip-off 5 minutes and move folk. But you're right. Scottish football doesn't see itself in the entertainment industry or in the sales and marketing world. They just see themselves as... Most of the people that run in Scottish football don't think like that. They're not wired up like that.
No, I mean, your point there about Thistle, it's just bonkers. I mean, I think I've said on this podcast before, I read something about the English Premiership and how they turn the contrast up so the grass looks really, really green. They paint the white lines on the pitch, which actually was bugging me on Saturday, which we'll get to the game on Saturday. You couldn't actually see the penalty spots in our penalty box on Saturday because our lines were so faded. But, and it may sound a little thing, but it's all about, they have the LED floodlights which are on, and I've noticed that we're now doing this with the floodlights, they are on permanently. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's a game in August, September, or November, December, their floodlights are on, the contrast is up so the grass is really green, they paint the white lines 2 hours before kickoff so that the white lines look really vivid and bright on the green grass. And then the camera angles in English grounds are all at an angle so that you minimise how many empty seats you see.
Yeah.
And it's focused down the pitch. And it's all then, that's all about generating, you know, making...
An image and a brand.
And a brand, yeah. And people listen to this may say, well, what does it matter, right? But if I think back to when I was young, right? So I was a child of the 70s and into the early 80s. I can remember when I was growing up. Now with hindsight, I don't think this now that I'm older, right? But see when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, that sort of very impressionable age, if I think of music.
Yep.
See The Who and see The Rolling Stones. I remember Bill Wyman being on Top of the Pops, singing Je Suis Un Rockstar with a V-neck jumper with nothing on, you know, with, like, it was just a V-neck jumper. There was, he didn't have a shirt or a T-shirt underneath it, right? And I remember thinking, who's that boring old man on the telly? Right? Now, that's changed, but it's the principle of, I wasn't then getting into the detail of, yes, but look what he's done for modern music as part of the Rolling Stones and blah, 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 blah. I just was turned off to the boring old farts on the telly because it wasn't modern sexy stuff. And if you think of young people watching the telly where they can now consume football from anywhere, their perception, some of them, and certainly ones whose parents aren't maybe obsessed with Scottish football like I might be, for them, Scottish football is a crappy product because it looks crap when they see it on the telly. So they're not going to be excited about wanting to go and see it. They'd rather stay at home, play their FIFA and watch the Premiership on Sky.
No, I totally agree with you there. And I'll regularly have a game on. There'll be a Scottish game on. And at the same time, there'll be a Premiership game on for England. And I'll flick back and forth. and it's like a different sport. Just exactly what you talk about, the product, how the arena's dressed and how it looks, and it's just totally different. And you flip back to, you've got game for Hamilton, they've got two stands and a gazebo. Yeah. And it's just, it's quite embarrassing. It really is quite embarrassing. I don't see it changing. I don't get the feeling that anybody's really bothered about stuff like this.
No, I mean, and they've got a new TV contract coming up from next season, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's the ideal time to then say, we're hiving off £1 million of this to go to a marketing budget for Scottish football. Because this is, because that's money you've not had. You know, it's like the concept of you save better, you know, the only way you'll ever save money is if you put it aside on payday. Because if you wait to the end of the month and see what you've got left after, you'll have spent it all.
Aye. No, I agree.
But that's just so, yeah, I particularly
I'm glad,
because...
I'm glad we got that cleared up.
but I'm just thinking about particularly, I noticed that, when I went to the basketball, you guys had made sure that the bit that was facing the cameras had the most amount of seats sold in it.
Yeah, we did, because we had just over 5,000 at that game, and there's 7,500, in fact, there's 8,000 seats where we count the seats on the floor. So it doesn't look, if you watch that game back, it doesn't look like there was 3,000 empty seats, but there was. But they were all out the way in the corners and up the back, and the cameras wasn't facing them. So, yeah, it was a good shame we didn't win.
Well, yeah, we can talk about that later. But on to winning teams. So after the Livingston and the break, we then had Ross County on Saturday. So what were your thoughts of the Ross County game?
I thought it was a great game. I'll rephrase that. I thought we played really well. It's always hard to sort of qualify how good you are as opposed to how bad your opposition are. But I thought, I can't remember watching many games at Celtic Park. I haven't seen possession stats, but I can't remember many games there where we dominated and created so much. And I couldn't believe that we were only one up at half time. But because we seemed to be, it was just very free flowing. It was pleasant to watch. It was just miraculous that we were only one up, because we must have scored in the first few, I don't know, it must have been the first 2 or 3 minutes that we scored the first goal.
I think it was 2.5, 3 minutes,
yeah. And I just thought the floodgates will open. Now, clearly they did after half time, but no, I thought it was a good performance. But quite an interesting team. My biggest surprise was the right back.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to have gone from having no right backs. We had two on the bench on Saturday.
And I
don't know. Frimpong looked good. He certainly looked good going forward. I'm not sure how much of a defender he is, but he certainly looked good going forward. But I was surprised that he left the Israeli guy. What's his name?
El Hamid,
aye, and Bauer on the bench. So I would have thought that, I'm thinking, or I'm hoping actually, that El Hamid is first choice. And maybe he was just given a wee bit of time to find Paul. But no, it was a great performance, some smashing goals. It could have been a lot more, but it's exactly what we needed. We looked very, very composed.
It was interesting, actually, because it was one of those ones where at half time we could have been easily four up,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't have been too flattering, but it's only one goal. And then we score those goals straight after half time, when in the first half we'd created all these chances that we had created through our skill,
mm-hmm.
And then we get these goals where the first one was, I couldn't work out what the guy was trying to do.
It was on the ground on a diving header.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is, I don't know if anybody listens ever done this, if you've been playing or something or whatever. The only thing I could think of is as the ball was approaching him, he's decided he's going to head it, and then it starts dipping down at the line. But because it's all happening in the space of a split second, his mindset's on heading it. So he's following the ball, and before he knows where it is, so he then sort of does this diving header, misses it, goes under him, and Edward
slots it in.
And then Callum McGregor just waltz through the middle of the two centre-halves who are gifting all this space in the middle of the park.
I know. I mean, I actually, it was quite interesting. I took my coach, my basketball coach, I took him, that's the first time he'd been at Celtic Park.
Right.
I took him on Saturday, and he's a real, like, he's a real student of basketball. Basketball, no other chat. But he enjoys all sport. And he was talking about the dominance Celtic had and what he would be saying to them as a coach at half time. And uh-huh. I would like to have been in that room to hear what Lenny had said. When I heard what he said. But you think, just by saying to players, be more direct, don't give them oxygen, you don't go, all right, okay, fair enough then. So we'll go and score 4 goals in 10 minutes. It can't be as simple as that. But they seem to, because they were quite well organised, keeper had a good couple of saves, but they came out sleeping, which is very surprising for a team like that. But no, the floodgates opened, and I thought we were going to get a few more, actually. But no, they seem to not chuck it, but they seem to switch off at half time.
So what was your coach saying that he would have said?
He was just saying that he would be saying that we've dominated this game, but this game should be finished. You should be annoyed with yourself. You should be in here 2 or 3 goals up, and this game is home and hosed, and that you should be. He wasn't saying home and hosed, to be fair. You know, seagulls are following trawlers and getting thrown fish and all of these.
What nationality is he?
He's French,
right?
He's very French, super French, very philosophical and all of these things. But he was basically saying that you should be annoyed with yourself and you go out and put this game to bed in the first 5-10 minutes, because you've got a big game coming up midweek and what have you. But just to be more clinical and to move the ball quicker, basically. He was saying there was too much passing about, and I think you might have been hearing under the last manager, he loved a pass. But be more direct and just be more clinical. To be fair, it's something that me and you could have said. But he was coming at it from the coach's angle. And for what it's worth, he adores Scott Brown. He says, that's the guy. I mean, he knows nothing about football. Didn't know a single player other than Edouard, who's French, obviously.
Yeah.
Never even heard of Julian. But he said, that's the guy you want. He said, that, everything's going through him. He's your quarterback. He's your point guard. Everything's going through him. And he looks like hard as nails. So that's Scott Brown for you.
So, pleased with that on Saturday. The only thing, there was a lot of debate at the end of the game about the fact that the referee had only added on 1 minute of injury time. And in fact, I think we paid something like 45 seconds. We didn't even play a full minute of injury time. Now, I remember, I used to work in a building, and Willie Young was in the same building, what, for Solicitors firm, on the same floor as us. So we'd meet him a couple of times. And I remember speaking to him once about the principle of adding on or not adding on injury time. And his point was, if there was a game like that where Celtic were 6 up and we hadn't scored a goal for 20 minutes, it was from the 70th minute onwards, we hadn't scored a goal and we hadn't really looked like scoring a goal, and we were just passing the ball side to side to side to side, and the opposition were 6 down. His point was, he didn't see the point in adding on any injury time, because all you were doing was, both teams were happy at that point for the game to finish, because Celtic hadn't been trying for 20 minutes, and all you were doing was risking that somebody picks up a needless injury.
Aye. Both coaches would be happy to blow the whistle at 70 minutes.
But I've seen a lot of people online complaining, because obviously we've now gone back to the top of the league on goals scored, so goal difference is starting to be a thing. And I've seen lots of people complaining that there was only 45 seconds added on. So what's your take on it?
I get very frustrated at this. Back to my point about the clock should be the clock. It should be totally honest. And apart from anything else, especially for betting, for gambling, if you bet 7-0 in that game and you've got a big, and the ref doesn't add on the appropriate amount of time, that just feels wrong. But the fact is, it's not truthful, because when you score 6 goals, there's at least 3 minutes of a restart for 6 goals. At least. By the time the players celebrate and wander back and take a bow and all of those things. So there's at least 2 or 3 minutes of injury time just from the goals alone. Now, yeah. I don't remember the trainer for either team being on the park, actually, as it goes. But for 6 goals, there's got to be at least 3 minutes of stoppage time. Is it the fourth official that calls it, or is it the referee that calls it?
I'm actually not 100% sure. I used to think it was that the referee signalled to the fourth official. I think that's what it is. I think the referee, or I think that's what happens. The referee,
because they always say on the TV the fourth official has indicated there will be 2 minutes of injury, but that's he hasn't. It doesn't mean he say that he's called it. But either way, it should be the right amount of time. And like you say, I don't think we will. I don't think it'll be that relevant. But imagine you lose a league on a goal or on two goals, and you've not had your injury time. It feels wrong to me. It just feels wrong. And you can't have in professional sport, it's not like a kids game where both coaches can get each other and just say, let's just wrap this. We don't want to inflict any more pain on the opposition and we're quite happy. It shouldn't have worked like that.
So, that was the Ross County game. So we've got the Lazio game. As we're recording this, it's tomorrow night. So, what's your team going to be for the Lazio game?
Well, I actually think the team, for me, it sort of picks itself, Brian. I think that there's only really two positions that I'm not sure who Lenny thinks is his first choice, and that's right back. I'm hoping that he thinks it's El Hamid. And the sort of the Mikey Johnson, Trevor Sinclair, Elio Anasi position, the sort of left winger, if you like, I think that's still up for grabs, but I think it'll be Foster in goals. It'll be El Hamid at right back, Ball and goalie at left back, Chris Sayer and Julian in the middle, McGregor and Brown, Forrest and Christie, they pick themselves, Edward up front, and probably Elio Anasi on the left. I think that's the only position that is maybe still up for grabs for your best starting 11, or arguably in Cham should be in our team. I don't know where he goes. I know he's injured.
I saw a thing tonight, he wouldn't be fit.
He'll be back for the weekend, but are you putting in Cham and ahead of Christie? It's hard to, but then Christie's not available at the weekend, so you might see in Cham playing up at Pittodrie at the weekend. But I think the team right now pretty much picks itself. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think it does. I think I find it interesting. El Hamid basically seems to play the big games.
Aye.
And I don't know whether... I think part of it is he's more defensive-minded. So you were talking about the surprise of seeing Frimpong playing at the weekend. And, you know, we don't know what he's like defensively. And I think basically he played...
He's too weak.
Well, yeah. I think he basically played from more or less as a winger who might defend a bit more than anything else. And I think
I actually thought it was poor in the first half.
Yeah, I tell you what.
I sit in the north stand, so yeah. You get a better look at him in the second half.
Yeah.
But I thought he was quite poor in the first half.
And then the other thing, but in the second half he was ripping them to pieces.
Oh God, aye.
The other thing for me about the team on Saturday that I meant to mention was apparently Tom Rogic played.
Not only did he play, he played for 90 minutes.
Yeah,
I bet he's put an overtime sheet in.
Well, somebody had to tell me at the end of the game that he played. I don't know what's happened to him, right? But I would like someone to tell me that. I mean, he was completely anonymous on Saturday, and I'd like someone to tell me the last time he played a decent game.
I don't know, Tom. I really liked Tom Rogic. I liked him as a player. He scored a lot of big goals for us, and he's got zero pace. And I my gut feel is that Tom Rogic isn't that happy at Celtic, and he's actually not that happy in Glasgow, and he wants to live in another country.
It's not really a gut feel, is it?
No. No. But the fact of the matter is, Tom Rogic, he's not going to play in England. He's not going to play in the Premier League. He's not got an engine. He's not an athlete that'll allow him to play in the Premier League. And I can see Tom Rogic, and that is just genuinely a pun, I can see Tom Rogic going somewhere like America. I don't think that he's going to be here long. And it doesn't seem a guy that's engaged for me. He's just going through the motions. I imagine he's getting paid pretty well at Celtic. But no, he's not. And again, he would be in the team ahead of Ryan Christie. So that's not going to happen. I think Christie's arguably been our best player this season. But no, I don't see him being there that long. He doesn't look that interested. And I don't know. I just you're right. I mean, I'm sure it's not the case. But since he scored that goal at Hampden,
but I mean, last season he had injuries, right? And I'm always suspicious. Well, not suspicious. I'm always, you know, how the stuff goes on behind the scenes at a football club. But they obviously don't come out and say stuff.
Of course,
you know, I wouldn't expect them to sometimes, but I'm always noting when there's a player who is out injured, he's going to be out for 3 weeks and he ends up being out for six and then comes back for like a couple of games and then is off with a niggle that nobody can really put their finger on and then is back in and off for a niggle. And if it's a player who you've hit, you know, there was transfer rumours about, you then start to think, right, okay, are you really injured? And I know that in the summer, Zenit St. Petersburg were the only team who came in for Rogic and he didn't want to go to Russia.
No.
He wanted to go, but last season he had a big injury and the one thing I do think about him, I think he's the type of player who needs game time to get back into the way of playing.
I know, I mean, I've heard you say this before, or I've heard somebody say it before, is that you almost need to say to a player, right, see what happens, doesn't matter what happens, see for the next 6 weeks, you're starting. And it gives them a confidence to try things and not to be scared. But I think if you say, you're playing for the next six games if you're fit, the position's yours, maybe he needs that. But I don't know, I think he's a man with a great future behind him. I think he's done at Celtic, is my gut feel. I don't think he'll be there very long. And let's face it, he's not going to be a big loss because he's just not been present. And what annoys me as well is that he had that injury, he was off for so long. And when he came back fit, he'd 10 days off and went back to Australia and get married. No. you've been off for months. You don't get a fortnight's holiday. That's not how it works in football. Let's face it, you wouldn't want him. You wouldn't rely on him in the trenches, would you? You wouldn't want him in a fight. He's got the heart of a mouse.
So, I mean, I don't want to sound as though we're slaughtering.
I better keep quiet. He lives about four doors up from me. I better keep quiet.
I just... when he's come into games, he just seems way off the pace, and his touch hasn't been great. You know, for the whole of last season when he did come in and out of the team, and then this season, and I think it's the two things of, I think he needs runs of games, and then like you, I'm just not 100% certain that he wants to be here anymore.
No, I don't think it is. That's and neither does his wife.
Right, okay. You're saying more than I'm prepared to say.
I've already said too much.
Yeah, so basically what I was told was his wife doesn't fancy Glasgow because it's a shitty cold city.
You're obviously speaking to the same people as me.
and you know, obviously that's going to have an impact. And you know, if you're from Australia and you've got nothing to keep you in Glasgow and you've got the ability and you know, you're in a work environment where you could go to work in somewhere warmer and sunnier, why wouldn't you?
I know. But hey, I'm just looking at his Wikipedia. So he's been with us 6 years. He's played 108 games.
Right.
I don't think that's a lot.
It's less than 20 games.
That's about a season and a half for Callum McGregor.
It is, actually.
He's played 108 games since 2013. There you go. I don't know what that says. But I don't think he's going to be a big loss. I don't think he'll be here for long. So, and one thing's for sure, the guy that sits next to me at Celtic Park will be delighted because he cannot stand up. But no, it was. And the thing is, he's bigging him up. If you'd listened to Lenny's post-match stuff, you thought Tom Rogic was man of the match. He's obviously trying to big him up.
Well, yeah, and it might just be as much to do with, you know, giving him confidence to because he needs him, and you know, he is a player who has got a track record of scoring goals at Pittodrie, and we're going there after Thursday, so you know, he's going to need him, and you know, because it's a squad game, and we need to have all our players played at the maximum level that they can do. So he's
and so, he is good. It gives me, and it's why I think we'll win the league with something to spare this year, is that he's in that category. I think we've got about 20, maybe even 22 good players, whereas Rangers maybe got 5 or 6. You are going to need those guys when it comes to, so you're getting deep into the season. And if you're bringing guys like Rogic or Ncham or something like that off the bench, that's massive players to bring off the bench.
Yeah. So getting back to Thursday, if we were talking about Elhamid that suddenly morphed into talking about Rogic, I just think he's maybe a more defensive minded player, and so when you're wanting to be a bit more defensive minded in Europe, certainly to have the back four a bit more defensive in European football, I think that's the reason. And in the big games, I think that's the reason why he's been getting the nod in those games.
No, I think he's an out and out defender. He's more your sort of Lustig, but with a bit of pace and a bit of he's quite a hard player. I like him. He's the sort of right back I like. He's a proper old school right back for me, and I'd be astounded if he's not the right back tomorrow.
So, what's your prediction for the score?
I think we'll beat them. I'm quite confident about it. I think it is Lazio, and they're a big team. They're not having a great season from what I understand, but I don't know. I've got a good feeling about this section, and I've got a good feeling about tomorrow night. And I think, in the same way as I did when Cluj came the other week, I think we'll win. I'm going to go for us to win 2-0 tomorrow night.
All right. So that's the Celtic.
Uh-huh.
We've got Glasgow Rocks. So tell us about your start to the season.
It's been quite mixed. There's a different format this year. The season started basically with one of the cup competitions. The league hasn't actually started yet. There's one of the cups are split in two sections, north and south. So we've got Newcastle, Manchester, Cheshire, Sheffield and Leicester. And we play them home and away. So there's 10 games. That are going on, and the top four come out each sections into quarterfinals. So the actual league's not started. I'm actually quite pleased about that. Everybody's finding their feet, but we've done okay. We've won a couple and we've lost a couple, and I think we'll qualify out of that section. We've got a really good bunch of guys this year. A couple of American boys, French guy, Lithuanian guy, and then mostly Scottish guys and some English guys. We've got a really good coach, Vincent, that I spoke of, and he's getting the best out of the team. We've got a game on Friday night. It's ladies' night at the Emirates on Friday night.
Ladies' night?
Oh, aye. See, we're marketing this. I'm not shy with the marketing, unlike most of the Scottish football. No, we try to, because mostly our games are Sunday afternoons. It's mostly families that come. And we find it harder to sell tickets on a Friday night, because it's still, if you've got a wee one that's sort of 7 or 8, 7:30 starts, sort of 10 o'clock before you're getting home, it's still quite a late night. So we're trying to market it as being a wee bit of more grown up, make it a wee bit more boozy and turn up the volume, a wee bit more of an adult sort of music playlist for a in-game DJ, what have you. And we're having a theme night of ladies' night. We're going to have a St Andrews night, and I'm even going to be ballsy and have a St Patrick's night. I'll get the jail for that, no doubt. But we're trying to make it a bit
more
fun.
You do know that this last chunks of Scotland don't see being anti-Irish as being any form of racism or anything like that. The fans had to be reminded. Of one football club's fans had to be reminded that actually you can't. UEFA has a different opinion of racism than Scotland does.
Aye, a different version of the truth.
Yes.
Aye. No. Well, we'll no doubt get stick for that.
You're going to have a St George's night then?
No, but I know when it is. No, let's not be hasty.
I don't think the season's on. I don't think your season's on when that's on.
I wish I could say that, but it actually is.
All right, okay.
But no, we'll have a St Andrews theme as well, and No, so we've got Friday night, so we've got Cheshire Phoenix, and they're coming up to Glasgow, and we really could do with a win, because we go away to Leicester after that, and Leicester's they're the champions of our league. They're effectively the Celtic of British basketball. They've got more money than everybody else, and pay a lot more money. It's hard to compete with them. But no, it's going well, and I think we're selling well. Brian, I mentioned we had 5,000. That's not normal for us. That was in the bigger arena. There's a smaller arena that's got 2,000 seats, and I think last week we had, I think it was like 73 tickets or something we hadn't sold. And we'll have a similar number, we'll have less than 100 not sold for this Friday night. So we're doing okay. And I mean, I mean, look, football's my first love, and it always will be. It's a totally different experience coming to basketball. You've seen it. It's a different night out. It's almost more like entertainment than sport for a lot of people. There's a core sort of 1,000 fans come to pretty much every game, and then there's a floating 10,000-11,000 that come once, twice, three times a season, and it's mostly families. And 62% of our tickets are bought by women, and it's mums buying for families. So it's a totally different environment to the football, and it's indoors, and you can actually sit and have a beer and watch it as well. Imagine that. Imagine such a thing.
But does that mean there's no working class people go to the basketball? it's only working class people that aren't allowed to buy beer at a sports event in Scotland.
Hey, we're in the east end of Glasgow. Trust me, there's a lot of working class people come. Be a funny story. We bought some. There's bollards outside the Emirates Arena. Just to stop, like, just before you get to the entrance, to stop vehicles coming in. So I thought it'd be a good idea to buy the, like, covers that go over the bollards with the rocks on them. So we bought 15. There's 4 left. 11 of them away. First game, so I'm going to be replacing them.
So how much are tickets?
It's £15 for an adult and 7 for a kid. And you can get a family 5 ticket for £40. So it's, I think it's good pricing.
It is, and it's, I mean, I think I've said in this podcast before, I've got a 9-year-old, he's not that into football. I mean, he obviously wants Celtic to win because that puts me in a good mood, you know, and stuff like that. So, but he liked going to the basketball because there was something happening all the time. And also you're a bit closer to it as well. You know, than you are at Celtic Park. I mean, I'm no stand-upper, so, you know, I'm a million miles away from the pitch. So you're closer to it. But there's just stuff going on all the time.
And it's, I find that when I look at our fan base, and I don't know this, but it's just my gut feel, is that the vast majority of people that come to the Rocks for a basketball game aren't football fans. They're people that not really sporty. The kids aren't like really into football or rugby or anything like that, and they like coming because it is different. It's like you say there, and if your boys' night, that's our bang age is sort of between primary 5, 6, 7. That's where we really get kids that come and really enjoy it. And like you say, there's something going on all the time. There's a in-game announcer and DJ. There's music going on. There's a mascot that's all over the place. We've got cheerleaders. It's non-stop, and it's done and dusted in about an hour and a half. So from start to finish, it's about an hour and 30, maybe an hour and 40 minutes. So less time to be sat in the seat. And I say it's indoors, and that does make a difference, the fact that it's indoors.
Absolutely, in Scotland.
It is. It's, I think about watching my kids play rugby. My kids aren't really into football either, but the number of times standing outside and watching them in the cold and the pouring rain and all these things freezing, you think, I wish my kids had been into basketball or volleyball or something. Could have watched it indoors. I would say this anyway, but it's true. Everybody that I bring for the first time loves it, and it's more professional than I think a lot of people think it's going to be. We go all out, and it's a wee bit cheesy and it's very American, but it's just cool. It's good fun.
So how's your season going to go?
I've got a wee feeling that we're going to have an all right season. We probably will not win the championship, but it actually doesn't matter because it goes into playoffs. Nobody remembers that London won their championship last year because Leicester won the playoffs. You want the playoffs at the O2 with 15,000 people live on the telly. So there's two cups you can win, and there's the playoffs and the championship, I've got a sneaking feeling that we could win one of the Cups this year, and that it wouldn't be a bigger surprise if we went to the final of the playoffs. We've got a good team, and I think we've got, genuinely, I think we've got the best coach in the league.
All right. Well, hopefully there's two teams you like who get the best coach in the league.
For sure.
And with that, I will say, Duncan, thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you for having
Cheers.
Me.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. So if you like the sound of Duncan's basketball team, you can go to glasgowrocks.co.uk and you'll find a wee bit more about them there and how you can purchase tickets and when their games are and things like that. As I said in the podcast, I've been a couple of times, really good fun. The other thing is obviously to keep an eye out, the Celtic FC Foundation Christmas appeal will be launching very soon. It's always around this time of year. The sleep out is happening shortly, so I don't know if there's still enough time to do it, but you can go online to the Celtic FC Foundation website and find out if there's still enough time to do it. But there'll be plenty of events coming up in the next wee while that you can participate in for the Christmas appeal. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Duncan Smalley. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.